We're in the midst of Chodesh Elul, and we need really to understand the dual nature of Rosh Hashanah itself, to understand Elul. There's a subject which was much debated through the era of the Rishonim, and ultimately it really stems back to the Tanoim itself. What is the nature of Rosh Hashanah? Now, we have a halacha, for example, that the Shalosh Regolim interrupt and bring to an end Shiva and Shloshim. What is the status of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in this? And this is debated amongst the Tanoim and Masechta and the Mishnah and Masechta Meir Kotten. If Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur can bring the termination of Shiva and Shloshim, that they actually have the full din of a chag. We actually paskin that they have the full din of a chag in this regard, that they interrupt Shiva and Shloshim. But it already touches on the essential point, that the nature of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is different than the chagim. In the Oros HaRuah we find a machlekes which really raged through the time of the Rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch finally, concludes, gives a conclusive opinion on it. But Oros HaRuah reports amongst his Rabbeim and others that he used to fast on Rosh Hashanah. Today we're standing in Mishpat, we need Kapara before the Rabbeinu Shalom, so what better approach to Kapara than to fast? And they held it was appropriate to fast on Rosh Hashanah. And this was much debated for a very long time, if this is appropriate or not. And we see, in fact, that in Ezra's time, they were at a quandary over this. Because at the beginning of the second bias, Ezra gathers the people on Rosh Hashanah, and he reads that out from the Torah, and the people begin to cry and weep to do tshuva. And then Ezra tells them they should go eat. The celebration today will be a schus for you. So apparently the people were disinclined. They felt that they have tshuva, they should fast. And Ezra was encouraging them in the other direction, that you should go eat. And that will be the schus. So apparently in the time of Ezra, they also debated this issue of what's appropriate. The Shulchan Aruch and the early Achronim already concluded that the normative practice is not the fast at all in Rosh Hashanah. It's not a fasting. But this touches really the essential issue. Rosh Hashanah is not, and Yom Kippur do not possess the same Simchas HaChag of the Shalosh Regolim. And that's because they're days of Mishpat. The Gemara asks why we don't recite Hallel on Yom HaNeron. The Gemara says, in a time when Sifrei Chaim Meisim Psuchim, is it possible for a person to say Hallel? Meaning the exaltation which should exist. Hallel is not an external expression. It's an internal expression of the depth of a person's neshama. And if a person is not in such a state where he can be totally possessed with simcha, it's inappropriate to say Hallel at such a time. And therefore, in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we don't say Hallel. Sifrei Chaim Umavus Psuchim, a person realizes our lives hang in the balance. It's not a day to jump and to dance. So that's an aspect of Rosh Hashanah, but on the other hand, there is some measure of Simchas Yontif in Rosh Hashanah too, and Mechoyev and Asup. And Chazal themselves address this duality, and Chazal tell us that the Tavosek of Gilu Bara'odah rejoice and tremble at the same time. That's the nature of the Yom HaNeron. It stresses two sides. And those two sides are the two sides of the varied elements of focus that we have on Yom HaNeron. We have on one hand the Ra'odah, that we tremble. We consider how responsible we are before the Rabbeinu Shalom for the things that we do. That's a very sobering thought. It's a very sobering reality. And that's one aspect. But on the other hand, Chazal also tell us, Elo is Rosh Tevis, ani l'doidi v'doidi li. I am devoted to my beloved Rabbeinu Shalom, and my beloved Rabbeinu Shalom is devoted to me. That's the Gilu. Chazal tell us in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, it's a pasuk that we recite on all, every Tainas Tzima in the Ashkenazi community. Right. We have the Aftara at Mincha. Right? The Sfarim don't have the Aftara at Mincha, but we have Aftara at Mincha, and it's from the Novi Yeshaya. Dear Shu Hashem behimotzai krou b'yoisakarov. Seek the Rabbeinu Shalom when he is findable. Call out to him when he is close to us. And the implication, the Gemara says, the time when the Rabbeinu Shalom is close, and there are times when he's not so close. So what's the meaning of this pasuk? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that in Aseres Yemei Tshuva, Dir Shu Hashem behimotzo krou b'yoisakarov. The Rabbeinu Shalom is most accessible at this time of the year. So there's a tremendous opportunity. Ani l'doidi v'doidi li. The Rabbeinu Shalom makes himself accessible. The king opens the doors of the palace and says, march in. Oh, you're welcome. Come. I'm here. So Elul, on one hand, is a responsibility. We realize it's mishpat as consequences. It's not simple. But on the other hand, it's a time of great opportunity as well. The Rabbeinu Shalom says, I'm here. You want to make strides? I'm ready to help you. The connection, to connect with Shechina is easier than any other time during the year. So that's the dun leitz, that's the gilo and the ra'ada. Responsibility and opportunity come together in life oftentimes. A person has the ability to advance in his career. It's an opportunity. But he has to pay very careful attention to it, to teach himself the things that he needs so that he can go up to the next level. If he's not careful enough and paying attention to it, so the opportunity will slip away. So there's responsibility. There are positive reasons why I should take the step. And it weighs upon me because there's a lot of effort that has to go into attaining it. But usually in life, opportunity brings with it responsibilities, burdens. And the Yom and the Roma, no less so. We have tremendous opportunity, but we have to be careful not to squander it. I just saw that, I think it was one of the Slonimber Rebbes, he says, I went to sleep, and I had a dream. And in my dream, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot all passed. And I woke up the day after Simchas Torah. And I was extremely despondent because I had such great plans, what I was going to accomplish in Elul and Tishrei, and it's all over. I missed the whole deal. Since then I woke up, and Baruch Hashem, it was still Erev Rosh Chodesh Elul. But now I paid attention to Elul. In my dream, I was frightened that I lost the whole opportunity. Now that I woke up and I realized that I had it, I was enthused. I was motivated. That's the nature of Elul. Responsibilities that we need, and on the other hand, the opportunity that it is. We need to approach things in a very realistic fashion. You know, a person may wake up in the morning and decide, well, the greatest mountain in the world is Mount Everest. So I want to conquer Mount Everest. I want to climb up. I want to travel to that part of the world, in Tibet, and climb up and climb Mount Everest. It's very nice. But meanwhile, you never climbed a hill, a rock face that was 200 feet. So how are you going to climb one that's 28,000 feet? So in the world of the spiritual, we have to do the same thing. We can't all of a sudden wake up, I want to climb Mount Everest. It's very nice that we would like to climb Mount Everest, but first we have to scale a hill that's 200 feet, then 1,000 feet, then 5,000 feet. Then maybe one day we'll reach the point where we can set our sights on scaling Mount Everest too. Now in Elul, there's a certain intensity to Elul which increases in Aseres Yemei Teshuva. And many G'dayli Olam have raised the issue, what exactly are we out to do? Now, when dealing with human beings, we may not suggest that we do it, but we may attempt to deceive people and have them believe that we are that which we're not. But when we're dealing with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, none of us would attempt to deceive him. So what is the point of the intensity which goes with Elul and Tishrei, if I know 2 months from now, it's going to be gone? So there are a number of G'dayli Olam, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zatzal, Rav Yaakov Galinsky Zatzal, the Dvarika, Talmud. I'll put it in the way how Rav Yaakov Galinsky saw this. He wasn't in Lithuania, the Russians came, and he wound up in the Russian zone, he wound up being arrested and sent to Siberia. And he was in a camp, in a labor camp, under the Soviets. And in this labor camp, there were all types of people, not only Jews. There were non-Jews that had run afoul of the Soviet system. There were Lithuanian generals that had been arrested when Russia conquered Lithuania. And they also sent them off to the Gulag to work. And they treated them, they gave them the most menial and degrading tasks to do. And these were the people that were the foremost generals of the Lithuanian army. So he used to wake up in the wee hours of the morning sometimes, and he would see that these generals would sneak under their bed, pull out a package, they'd put on their uniforms, the Lithuanian uniforms, and they'd march around this whole dormitory where they were sleeping, giving orders. You do this, you go here, you do this. And he was rather astounded. I mean, they did not impress him as people that had lost their minds. So what in the world did they bother to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, put on their uniforms and start marching around and giving orders? So he waited for the opportunity and he became sidled up to one of these generals. And he asked him, tell me, what in the world are you doing? First he tried to deny that it happened, but Rav Yaakov Galinsky said, listen, my eyes were not deceiving me, I know what happened. So finally he told him. He said, right now I'm incarcerated by the Russians and I'm in a very difficult state. But I intend one day to emerge from this state. And to emerge from this state, I have to remember who I am. I'm not an avid, a serf of the Russians. I'm not one to do the menial tasks. I'm a general in the Lithuanian army. And I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go back to my post. But meanwhile, I need to remember who I am. And I put on my uniform in the wee hours of the morning, and I go around as if I'm issuing orders to my troops that I should remember that I should know myself who I am. And that will sustain me through this very difficult period. So Rav Yaakov Galinsky Zatzal said, that's what we do during Elul in Tishrei. We have to know who we are. We have to know what we're able to achieve. That doesn't mean what I'm able to achieve, I can achieve now. You know, if I wanted to run in the marathon, if I wanted to, maybe I could. But I couldn't get up tomorrow and start running in the marathon. I'd have to start the train first, a quarter of a mile, a half a mile, a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles. You know, it'll take me a few years. And maybe I'll build up, you know, the muscle strength and balance and the wind that I could think about running in the marathon. But I have to know what my potential is. So I have to know, listen, I'm not an old man. I could run, I could do whatever. Maybe I'm not ready to do constantly, to go to the nth degree. But I can touch, I can realize what my potential is. If I realize what my potential is, that I have the innate ability to do it. So I'm not there yet, that's true. But at least I know where I have to go. At least the sense of direction, the goal is clear. It may take me 30, 40, 50 years to get there, but I know where I want to go. And I know what I'm capable of doing. Right now, I can't do it. You know, I could run a little bit. I can't run for, you know, 20 hours, 10 hours straight. I could run for 15 minutes. I could run for half an hour. So I have some abilities. If I build on that ability, I can go further. So I need to realize what my abilities are. And that's what we do during Elul and Tishrei, as a realization of, number one, what the goals are, what we would like to achieve, and what ultimately I'm capable of achieving. Right now I'm not ready. I'm not at that level that I could live at this level constantly. But it sets a tone for myself of what's possible. In the Lithuanian yeshivas, which are almost basically all the non-Hasidic yeshivas of the world today, basically. So the Derech Avodah stems from the altar of Slobodka. And in his teaching, he stressed Godless Adam, what a person can accomplish. What are the latent abilities that the Rabbeinu Shalom has given us? And it's interesting, there was a sefer which was published long after the altar had passed. And that sefer is the sefer of Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah wrote many svarim. We unfortunately have very, very few of them. Right? In the Shaar HaTshuva, he refers to the fact that he wrote a Shaar on Torah. He wrote a treatise on Torah. We do have is a small work of his published maybe 20, 25 years ago called Shaar HaAvodah, an Avodah that has served the Rabbeinu Shalom. We have sefer a year. We have a few small svarim. Other than the Shaar HaTshuva is the magnum opus that we have. In Shaar HaAvodah, the first thing that Rabbeinu Yonah says what a person needs is Godless Adam. We need to recognize the abilities that the Rabbeinu Shalom has given us. That's step number one. If we don't recognize the abilities, then we can't go anyplace. A person that thinks that he can't accomplish. The Ramosha Chait, Zecher Tzadik Levrocha, the Rosh Hashanah of Chofetz Chaim in Yerushalayim, he grew up in Philadelphia. So one of his mishalim, he said, he once went to the zoo in Philadelphia, and there was a lion in the zoo. So he went over to the zookeeper, and he said, I want to know, is this fence high enough and strong enough to keep the lion in? So the zookeeper said, I'll tell you, the reality is it's not. But it's set up in such fashion that the lion thinks that it's strong enough to keep him in. And because of that, the lion will never get out. If we think we can't do something, we will never do it. It's only when we have the notion within ourselves that the Rabbeinu Shalom has given me abilities, and I can get there, that it's possible to go forward, to achieve something. Now the question is how we go about achieving something. This is very, very important. There are a number of different aspects which are very, very significant. In the writings of Rav Yisrael Salanter, Zatzal, focused on a Gemara in Menachos. The Gemara in Menachos states that, as we know, we read twice a day in Parshas Tzitzis, there are two parts to Mitzvah Tzitzis, the white strings and the Tchelis, the bluish strings. How many bluish strings, we don't know anymore. We have at least three different opinions in the Rishonim. Some say that half the strings are supposed to be tchelis and half loven, so at the end you wind up with 4 and 4. Some say one strand, but both ends of one strand is supposed to be tchelis, so there are two. And some Rishonim learned that one half, one strand, meaning one half of a tzitzah, and it is one of the eight is blue and the other seven are white. So we have at least three Shitis Rishonim that we're aware of how to do Mitzvah Tchelis. Now, the Mitzvah Tchelis was never an easy mitzvah to do because the Tchelis, the dye, was expensive. It was came from some type of snail. It had to be captured, it had to be processed, it had to be produced. It was an expensive item. And the Gemara even Shas even reports that there were people that perpetrated a fraud. They used kloilon, meaning dye, which was derived from a tree, which was similar to tchelis, and they went around, they came to shul, and they say it was a firmayi like everybody else. He also had tchelis, but it was a bluff. It wasn't tchelis. It was a dye from something else. And we see that the people were challenged when it came to doing the tchelis. It was not an easy mitzvah to do. So the Gemara Menachah says the following. If a person failed to put in the white strands in the tzitzis, he will be punished much more severely than if he fails to put in the tchelis strands. It means if he put in eight white strands and he didn't put in tchelis, so the einish would be smaller than if he didn't put in the white strands at all. Why? So the Gemara says very simply, the white strands were basically of insignificant cost. You took some wool from a lamb and you made a few tzitzis. How much did it cost altogether? But the tchelis was expensive. So therefore, both of them, a person that fails to put in tzitzis has erred, he sinned. But the person that did not put in the tchelis at least has a valid excuse why he did. You're wrong for doing it, but there's a reason that you didn't do it. It's not just willful negligence. Listen, I had to spring for a lot of money. I wasn't ready to spring for so much money. Okay, but what's your excuse for the tzitzis? The tzitzis didn't cost you anything, basically. Pennies. So why don't you have tzitzis? So Rav Yisrael of Sananta derived from this Gemara in Menachos that if you look at each class of Averis, within each class, which is the ones that we're most culpable for? The ones that are easiest for us to correct. Because the Rabbanu Shalom will say, listen, the ones that are hard to correct, I understand why you didn't correct them. You were challenged. But A, B, C, D, E, and F, you weren't challenged. All you needed was to pay a little bit of attention and you would have put them in order. So why didn't you put those things in order? So Rabbi Saul said that we should do the opposite of what we're inclined to do. We're inclined to take our biggest problems and that's what we attack. We want to attack the biggest problems. And Rabbi Saul Salanta says we should start from the other end. We should attack the simplest problems. Because most of what the Rabbanu Shalala may be upset with us about is the simple problems to solve. What does Rashi write at the beginning of Parshas Eikev? Eikev is an unusual word in the Torah. Because. But Eikev is usually not the word that we use. So why do you use the word Eikev? So Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Eikev tells us Eilu mitzvah shodim dosh ba'kevav. It's an allusion that Eikev is also a lashon to Okev, to the heel. The mitzvahs that we don't pay, we're negligent about, that we don't pay attention to. Those are the mitzvahs which we have to be particularly careful about if you want to be zeichet Eretz Yisrael. Because as Rav Yisrael says, the greatest complaint that the Rabbanu Shalom has against us is why we didn't put those things in order. Those things were easy enough. Just pay a little bit of attention. A person has a hard time getting up in the morning. So if it doesn't come to daven Tefillah B'Tzibur, it's not a good thing. But if the Rabbanu Shalom asks him why he didn't come, he says, listen, Rabbanu Shalom, I don't get up 6 in the morning for anything. Not for, it just doesn't happen. I don't care what's taking place. I don't get up at 6 in the morning. Okay, this is not the best excuse, but it's a reason. Then sitting with a cup of water, and you don't make a brocha, shahako. So why didn't you make a brocha? What was hard about that? Something was hard about that? That means you just don't care. That's already a serious matter. We don't have an excuse for such a thing. So Rabbi Yisrael says we should attack where the Yetzer Hara is the weakest, not where it's strongest. The military always tries to attack where the enemy is weakest, not at its strong point. the essence of combat, of organized combat, is to discover where the enemy is weak and then punch through his lines in the weak spot and use that success to overcome where he's strongest. But the initial point of attack should be where the enemy is weak. Find his weak spot and attack him at that point. So that, Rabbi Saul says, is the way we should go about tshuva is the opposite of what we think. The real intractable problems we need in times to chip away at them, a little here, a little there, to chip away at them. But what to really change? What to really change is the things that are simple to change. And that's what Rabbi Saul says. So that's a very, very tell them they should close the door, because they have to go to the hall and close the door. Secondly, Rabbi Saul writes that we have to approach challenges of life from two sides. One is lahakdin anisoyin and lahagdil ayir. One is to find ways to lessen the anisoyin, that it should be, I should be less tempted to do what I'm not supposed to do. And the other is to raise the level of the Yirah Shamayim. So from a combination of both of those, that I should succeed in doing that which the Rabbeinu Shel Olam wants. We have a Chumash Rabbi Yisai. Chumash Chumash Yitayah. Yaakov Avinu sees that Laban is not looking favorably upon him anymore. So he said, the Rabbeinu Shalom then comes to him, Shuvah l'Eretz Avosecha l'Molotecha ve'yayimach. It's time to leave. Go back to Eretz Yisrael. Vayishlach Yaakov v'yikro l'rocha l'leya sod el tzedek. And he tells him, your father does not seem that he looks upon me favorably anymore. And the Rabbeinu Shel Olam came, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam commanded me to go. And you know, in fact, how much your father attempted to cheat me, etc. But Tan Rochel Vileya, but Tamar Nalo, Ha'od Lonu Chelik Ben Achla Vavei Savina, Do we have any chalek in the house of our father? Treated us like strangers. And he took our money. So their answer, what did they answer? Yaakov Avinu told them the Rabbeinu Shalom came to him. And what did they answer? Do we have any place, still have a place in our father's house? So what they told them, they did in effect is, they realized that Rabbeinu Shalom told them to go. But that's not so easy to do. So the first step that they took is they told them, we don't feel comfortable here anymore. And therefore we are favorably disposed to leave. So the first step that they did is they lessened the concern of leaving. They said, we don't feel wanted here anymore. We don't feel we have a place here. If you feel you don't have a place, then it's very easy to listen to the Rabbeinu Shalom to leave. If you feel this is your hometown, you have lived here for generations, your family is here, your roots are here, your culture is here, your language is here, that's so easy to leave. So their initial response was lahakdin anisayon, to lessen the problem that they have, to reduce the issue. There are different ways of reducing the nisayon. One of them that Rabbi Saul tells us is what he says is lahachlif yetza b'yetza. In effect, we need to use the tools of the yetza hara against the yetza hara. Use his own methodology against him. So the marshal that I always give is the following. I can't drink too much coffee anymore, but I do still get, if I smell a good cup of coffee, I get a rush. And I pass by a place with a roasting coffee, it's my ain't ulam habo. So a person doesn't want to get up for the morning in the minyan. Well, he'd like to come, but he's not the early riser type. Not his thing. Yes, and to do something at 2 o'clock in the morning, that's fine. But to be up at 6 in the morning, it doesn't go. So a person can tell himself like this, listen, I like a good cup of coffee, a really good cappuccino I like. So if I get up and I go to the minyan in the morning, after minyan I'm going to go buy myself a cappuccino. But I have enough discipline, if I don't get up for the minyan, I'm not buying a cappuccino today. Now it's 6 o'clock in the morning and I have to get up. So the Yetzer Hara comes and tells me, listen, it's cold, you're tired, pull up the covers, go back to sleep, you'll be fine. So now I don't have the Yetzer Toiv coming to tell me to get up. The Yetzer Toiv is to eat the Yetzer Hara, finished him off long ago. He hasn't been winning this battle. But now I have another Yetzer Hara coming. I have a desire for a good cup of coffee. It's also Olam Hazeh. So now I make a cheshbon. If I'm going to sleep in, I'm not going to have my coffee today. So I don't like that idea. I like the coffee. So now I got out of bed for what reason? Not because the Yetzer Tov told me minyan is so great. No, the Yetzer Tov was not doing too well on that count. He was down for the count. But now I got up because I used the Yetzer Hara's own methodologies. Which is going to be stronger, my laziness, or my taiva, my desire for a good cup of coffee. So now I've used the Yetzer Hara's methodology against himself. I'll fight him with his methods. It's lahachlof Yetzer b'Yetzer. I have the inclination to be lazy now, but I also have the inclination to want a good cup of coffee. So a good cup of coffee for me can defeat the reason to be lazy. I'll enjoy the coffee more than the laziness. So this is one of the methodologies of Rav Yisrael of Salantz. Now, principally, we need to be realistic. We need to, first Rav Yisrael pointed out that most of what we need to do for the Rabbeinu Shalom are the things that are easy to correct. That's the biggest problems that we have. And secondly, the Vilna Gaon writes in Bishlei that why does the Rabbeinu Shalom give us life? For what reason? to accomplish that which we have yet to accomplish in life. That's what we give in life. You know, I have my two mashalim that I use. There are varied things that go around and around and around in this world. You know, you take your kid, your grandchild to the merry-go-round. So the merry-go-round goes around and around and around as long as it goes around. But every time around, every circuit is exactly the same as the one before. Exactly the same. At every point, everything is exactly the same as it was last time. Just to keep going and going and going until the music stops. That's the merry-go-round, the carousel. I remember, I have no idea, they tell me it's similar today, but I can't tell you for sure. You would know better than me. I haven't been in the Statue of Liberty probably in 55 years, approximately. Maybe a little bit more than that. 6, 7, 8, I don't know, maybe even a little bit more than 55 years. When I went to the Statue of Liberty, so there was a spiral staircase that started at the bottom, went around and around and around, and I think it was like 10 floors till the shoulder, and you couldn't go higher than that because the torch had been damaged, and there was no public access to the torch in those years. Now, it was a very tight spiral staircase, and 3 or 4 steps, you made a whole revolution. After you made that revolution, you went around. You were no longer where you were before. You were a little bit further up than you were before. You went around another few times, another revolution, you went a little higher, a little higher, a little higher. Each revolution pushed us a little bit higher than we were before. And the Vilna Gaon writes, that's, the Rebbe Hashan didn't give us life to be on the merry-go-round. Well, we'll run around the track again. I'll do exactly this year. I'll do the Chagim, I'll do Shabbos, I'll do learning, everything as I did last year. That's not what the Rebbeinu Shalom kept us here for. The Rebbeinu Shalom kept us here that when we finished running around the track from this last Rosh Hashanah to this Rosh Hashanah, at the end of the day, we should be standing at least a little bit higher than we were before. A little bit. Now, we'll ask the Rebbeinu Shalom, listen, give us more time so we can keep going up. But each year, incrementally, to some degree, we should raise ourselves above where we were before. We shouldn't be stagnant. That's the essence of what the Rebbeinu Shalom gives us life for. But to utilize the time, we have to think, we have to prepare. We have to think and we have to prepare. If we don't plan and we don't prepare, then it gets very hard to use the Yom HaRom properly. You know, if someone wants to succeed at a particular time and place, there's a tremendous amount of effort that goes into it beforehand to make sure that when the time comes, I'm ready for it, I'm prepared, and I'm ready to go. And especially, what better way that we don't have to wait? We could begin making the Achonos and Elul. We could raise ourselves during Elul so that by the time Rosh Hashanah comes, we've already started to implement that which we intend to do in the next year. Why wait till Rosh Hashanah? And this really touches upon a very, very famous and beautiful vort of Rav Yitzchak Petterberg, or Rav Yitzchak Blaser, one of the foremost disciples of Rav Yisrael of Salant. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about the fact that we appear individually before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam on Rosh Hashanah B'Mishpat. And the Gemara says, Kivnei Moron. That's the language of the Mishnah. And the Gemara gives 3 interpretations of what it means. This is the famous one that we all know. As the sheep coming for the Meiser Behema. So the cattle dealer opens, the cattle raiser opens a small gate. And they one by one they push through from one corral to the next. And every 10th one he marks with a stripe. So he knows that that's the Meiser. That's Kivnei Moron. So each one goes through individually. That's the pshat that we all know. The Gemara offers 2 further interpretations. One is, as Kivnei Moron means, a narrow mountain pass. There was enough room for one person at a time to file through, not 2. You can't walk side by side. Only one person at a time can go. And then finally, the Gemara says, "Kichayalo shobeis David," as the units of David HaMelech's army, when they march forth into battle, they go one by one. So the Shaila is, it's enough, there more than enough perhaps that we need one Moshel, but we need three different Mishalim, three different opinions. What this Moshel Kibneimaron means, whatever it means, the point is a very simple point, that we can't hide in the crowd. You know, we would like to hide in the crowd, but on Rosh Hashanah, the Rabbeinu Shalom calls us up one by one, so we can't hide in the crowd. Okay. So we need three Mishalim for that. So Rav Itzel of Petterburg, as Atzal says, that this Mishnah is addressing, these three Mishalim are all complementary, and they're addressing a very simple issue. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Ches that Melech v'Hedyot of a king of a country or a citizen is supposed to be judged, the king is judged first. Why? Because the fate of the king as the leader of the country determines a great deal of what happened to the country. And therefore, the Midas HaRachma of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as he calls the king first, said there's less a Charanaf. The more sinful people pass, the more it arouses the Charanaf. So the Rebbeinu Shem pushes the king earlier. Well, he says, all of us want to arrive at the Mishpat earlier, as early as possible. So he says, there are different ways. He says, Kivnei Moron, how do the cattle, who gets out the gate first? It's very simple. The most robust and the strongest one push the weaker one to the side and they push through. So he says, that's a moshel for the tzaddikim. The tzaddikim hador, they go first. So he says, most of us don't have to worry about that problem. We're not from the tzaddikim hador. So that's not our issue. When we look at the movement of an army, no one other than the commander-in-chief understands why the army moves. He knows the battle plan. He knows what he's out to do. The soldier has no idea. So he says, the Rabbeinu Shalom is also inscrutable, and he moves pieces on the board in this world for reasons that we can't fathom. And certain people get pushed to the front for reasons that we cannot begin to understand what they are. So that also is not relevant to us. Because if the Rabbeinu Shalom pushes us to the front, good, and if he doesn't, so he doesn't. He says, but the third one is important. And the third one is, there's a narrow mountain pass. He says, if you come to the post office, so how does the line work? Whoever gets there first is first. You come to a narrow mountain pass, that's it. Nobody, if anyone pushes there, they're all dead. So whoever comes first goes first. Whoever's second, second, third, third. So he says, the earlier we show up to the Mishpat, then the earlier we're going to stand before the Rabbeinu Shalom Rosh Hashanah with this greater Midas HaRachamah. So he says, at least what we could do, he said, if a person's thought increases the intensity of his learning of Musa from Rosh Chodesh Elul, so he's already online for the din. And certainly, Allah has come of a Kamadan, if a person undertakes in Elul to start doing some things that he wants to do to improve upon in the coming year, he doesn't wait till Rosh Hashanah, he actually implements the improvements. So he's certainly involved with Rosh Hashanah. So we have the greatest opportunity to avail ourselves of the Midas HaRachamim. May the Rabbeinu Shalom grant, we have a little bit more than 2 weeks to Rosh Hashanah, we should be zeicha to use the time well, to prepare in a fashion which will allow us to avail ourselves of the opportunities of Yom HaNaroam. Good night, Rabbi Yisrael.